afternoon to you, and welcome to WPKN's Mic Check. I'm Valerie Richardson, and we're here on every Sunday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Our diverse roster of hosts present a wide variety of topics for discussion focusing on global, national, and regional issues and their effect on our local community. Just as the phrase mic check was used to mobilize people to create a human microphone during the Occupy movement, this weekly program amplifies our community's many voices and brings them to the airwaves. And this show will be posted on WPKN's podcast site within the next day or so. Mic check is followed on WPKN at 6 p.m. by the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. And I'm really pleased to be here with you this afternoon. And I'm happy to welcome Lucy McClure. Hi, Lucy. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. And Lucy why don't you say what you did and what's going on?
Well, I'm one of the founders of the Nasty Women Movement here in Connecticut. I'm also a photographer and an educator and community organizer. We just did our yearly Nasty Women Art exhibition on March 8th, this past Friday, which was our third year. And we partner with the Yale Divinity School.
And I understand you had quite an event on Friday.
Yes, we had a little over 1,000 people come on opening night.
Wow. Well, it's been a really amazing event, and you know, I participated in the first one. I have to say my own personal artwork has been a lot more sort of inwardly focused in the last couple of years, but it's really been an amazing focus for the community, a great way to come together and for a lot of different people to bring their art out. So why don't you talk about the Complicit Erasure of the Body, what the theme is about this year?
So this year, we were trying to come up with a theme, and the way it came to happen was when, during the Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford hearings, I had a few, maybe like a week or two later, there were a couple of solidarity signs that were posted all over Yale, and that there has been some vandalism that happened, you know, people tearing it down, and they're destroying that. And then a few days after that, a student from the Divinity School, Laura Warden, reached out to me. And she said, you know, I've been curating shows at the school. I think it's a really delicate time that we're dealing right now. And I feel that, you know, the religious community need a voice. And she was interested, you know, in doing something in the relationship to the Me Too and the hearings that were happening. And we were the only organization and pretty much in the Connecticut area, in New England area, that it was directly working with feminist work, but also tackling current issues. And she invited us to work together in partnership. But last year, we did our theme on Around the Me Too, which was when it first started, and it was like on Silence Breakers at the Eli Center. But then we, thinking together, Laura and I, like, well, what is the core of the Me Too movement? You know, like, what is going on right now? Who needs to have a voice? And we realized that there was this gray area that needed to be addressed. And the gray area, we felt there was complicity, acts of complicity. And pretty much when we think about complicity, it means that we are all responsible when things happen or don't. It kind of turns the camera on all of us and makes us question, have I been complicit on allowing sexual violence and abuse to happen around people, and especially on marginalized groups? And when we thought about what acts of complicity do, they don't, not only they create erasure, but through that erasure, it also, it removes someone's, you know, it breaks their spiritual self to their emotional self and eventually, you know, to their body. So it's kind of like this erasure that happens completely to the point that the body is gone. And we figured that that was the theme, but we never expected that, you know, a few months after we launched the call, that people would be talking about complicity, you know, and people being complicit in different ways. So I guess it kind of worked out in that way.
Well, this show, and it is in the third year, and the first year was just shortly after the large Women's March in, mm-hmm. in Washington, and that was just after the presidential election and after Trump went into office. There was just a lot of energy, a lot of passion, and it certainly has continued, and a lot of frustration, I would say, certainly.
Yes.
And I was actually at one of the rallies that was happening at the time, the Kavanaugh hearings, that you were one of, at least one of the speakers at that rally. People come, and this opportunity for people to come together. I think complicity is it's a subtle topic, and it's sort of a loaded idea in a lot of ways. How many artists did you have come out for this? And maybe you could talk about some of the works that you've really found.
For submission, we had about 160 pieces being submitted to us. And from a range to, two-dimensional work, we had a lot of literary pieces, we had video work, and a lot of sculpture and installation pieces as well.
And do you want to talk about maybe a couple of those? How maybe even what you yourself did?
Sure. Well, what was really interesting was thinking about how we would make the exhibition work, because as you know, we launched a call and it's open for everyone to submit their work. It's one work per artist. It's free to submit, and again, it's about that platform of inclusion through the arts and allowing for artists, makers, creators, thinkers to come together into a single space and being connected through a single theme and the arts, and people that would never share a space together, but then they are connected through that single message. And it was like, it's challenging because we don't have an actual location. Like, we don't have a gallery space. We don't own a space to always have the show. So we always have to work with the venue every year. And how can all of these artwork come to exist and fill the walls? And you have to really get creative. And I think, like, what was fascinating was to figure it out together, working with Laura and with the Divinity School and with artists themselves, how we could manage to make, as people enter the school, to look at and engage with all these different pieces. I mean, some of them are just, like, right there in front of you because of scale. Some of them are tackling the theme of complicity and erasure by talking a little bit about religion, because it was inside of the Divinity School. So they're thinking about in relationship to the actual venue. And that's what something that happens in the show. It's like every year people think about the setting, they think about the theme, and they create work specific to the show, or sometimes they have something that they have been working on or they had in the past, and all of a sudden there is an opportunity that they can show that work. But I think one of a really great piece that we had was called Build a Patriarchy. And this was about the idea of, like, how women and people in general, they become erased by the idea they are, because they're caretakers. And because they're caretakers, because they're mother, because they're, they are home and they're nursing, they're feeding their child, they're doing all these things, they are not valued. They're not considered something that, that it is a full-time work, that they should be seen as something with value. And when we think about that these important and crucial things, they're part of, like, the foundation of human development are not being valued, women having to go back to work too soon, not having the support that they need, not having paid family leave, all these things. And the artist, Patty, I forgot her last name, Patty Macias, she said, who would we bill for this? And the patriarchy is the one we would bill, because of patriarchal society and culture, that's what reinforces, this feeling of erasure, but also of the mothers caretakers feeling that their work for caring for others is devalued and not seen.
I think one of the... Go ahead.
No, and then I think that was really interesting. So people can go on their website, and then we invite them to go still to buildthepatriarchy.com, put their hours, and understand what is it, you know, that it's not being valued. You know, like how many times a day do you spend doing laundry? You know, how many times a day do you spend caring for someone else? And all, and then you just put it like if it was a $20 an hour, and then by the end, the website would generate an invoice for you.
Wow.
And then you use that invoice, and then we invite people to bring it to the show, you know, and tape it into the wall. So that's kind of like one of our interactive pieces.
And that's buildapatriarchy.com.
Correct.
That's very cool. You're listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. I'm Valerie Richardson. I'm speaking with Lucy McClure, who is an artist and an activist in the New Haven region, and she is one of the co-founders of Nasty Women Connecticut and curator of the show that just opened this past Friday night. And how long will it be running?
It will be until March 31st, and we have hours all week long from 9 to 5. People can go into the Divinity School and look through the work, and we are currently working on the Saturday hours as well. And then we have a month-long programming coming up. We are partnering with Artspace New Haven to bring the band out there, which is a sci-fi rock opera by this band called Princess, and they just had their world tour kicking off at the Warhol Museum, and they're coming to New Haven, and people can purchase tickets ahead of time at the Artspace newhaven.org website. We also have Trans Body, an exploration of embodiment and history and corporality through dance, which is a partnership with the New Haven Pride Center and Elm City Dance Collective, and that's on the 30th of March. And then we also have a panel with Black Lives Matter New Haven that it's called Erasure of the Black Body, and it's going to be taking place at the Urban Collective. But those are some of the three programs that we have. And again, one of the important things for us is really thinking about this program like as a partnership of all these different organizations, you know, thinking about intersectionality, thinking about inclusion, and as we're thinking about erasure and oppression, how it affects each group differently, and we cannot understand how does it affect another person unless we create a space for those voices to exist and explain to us and educate us how is it that they experience oppression, erasure, differently from us.
So I see the Erasure of the Black Body is happening on Saturday, March 23rd at 3 o'clock. Where is the Urban Collective space?
It's right, Urban Collective, it's right off, it's on Willow Street, 85 Willow Street. And everything is on our website and on our Facebook page. So the Facebook page is Nasty Women Connecticut, and our website is nastywomenct.org.
And then out there is on Sunday, March 24th. You're going to have a busy weekend, a lot of activities.
Yes, but there's still two more programs that are on the works. One is with the Yale Center for British Art, which is a really exciting partnership with them, and we're tying into their current exhibition, the William Hunter and the Anatomy of the Modern Museum. And we're also working on another event together with the Divinity School and the Divinity School students, and also with Cher and with the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And it's about, you know, thinking about, you know, the university, but also an educational institutional and having feminist art, you know, and art that really is engaging, but also that allows us to talk about the difficult things, but also how we create a safe space at the same time as we're connecting students to resources.
I think this is such a, you know, as I was saying sort of there in the earlier part of the show, we all had a lot of anger after the election of 2016 and after Trump came into office in 2017. And as women in particular, I think our roles have been diminished and demeaned, and so many protections are being rolled back. And I know that one that's really hit me hard thinking about it in the last few weeks is just the idea that many of the safeguards for campus sexual abuse are being removed, and yes. You know, that is such an act of not only of complicity, it goes far beyond that. Just the idea that we are going to choose not to protect you, and
yes.
That is it's somewhat ironic that you're engaging this time with the academic community, and
I think it's important, and I feel that it's such an unexpected and a great partnership with the Divinity School, considering that, you know, the history of religion, patriarchy, and women, and even with the LGBTQ community, and all of a sudden for them to open their doors to welcome not only the community of New Haven outside of Yale, but also feminist art and a dialogue. And I think that's so important because it's the idea of how we're making efforts to coexist, but also create dialogue around one another when we are living in a political climate that is just creating so much segregation and a lack of dialogue among us. And we need to, like, try to engage somehow. We need to try to at least, and we can't do anywhere until we start in our communities, you know, by talking to students, partnering with organizations, understanding how we can create some kind of change. And to us, we feel it is through the arts, you know, through the arts and through collaboration.
Has this always been a part of your work, or have you always been someone who's engaged politically?
I think I've always wanted to do some sort of positive change, but I don't think I always knew how.
Mm-hmm.
During the election, I think it definitely it changed something. I think there was this need, but I think it was the right time. And that's what I always tell people. I think we can all do something to make our communities better. We all have that power, nobody's expecting some major act. I mean, I obviously don't have all the answers, and I think that's why I partner, you know, with other organizations. That's why I have, you know, my two partners in SD Women. I have Atala Shepherd. I have Luisa DeCasi. I mean, these two incredible women who have been so supportive and brought so much diverse to the team, but we know that we can't do this work alone. And then we have to see, how else can we be better? And I think that's part of that community building, by engaging with others and asking them questions and letting them know that we are trying, but we know we can't do this work alone. And that it's just figuring out all the different ways to create spaces that we can all feel welcomed, feel seen, and feel that we just, you know, that we matter, that we're not invisible. And I think there's a lot of people that feel this way and have felt this way.
And I should say that just in terms of logistics, the Yale Divinity School is located at 409 Prospect Street in New Haven. And it's a little mm-hmm. bit, I find it a little intimidating in terms of trying to find where things are there. And I will say that mm-hmm. people can, the parking is sort of up on the side, and there's a side entrance to it. And
yeah.
That's usually the best place to access where there are art exhibitions. And they have quite a lot of arts programming. The School of Sacred Music is actually mm-hmm. a school that encompasses all sorts of arts, including visual arts and dance and poetry. And I've had a lot of friends who have been through that program and have done projects through that. And this is along with engaging the academic, this is engaging the spiritual side of this question too, which I think mm-hmm. gives it another layer.
Absolutely. And we feel very lucky for this partnership. And I think every collaboration that we've been doing every year has been incredibly enriching and humbling, because the more that we're partnering with these organizations, the more we learn about speaking of myself, I learn about where is my privilege, you know, and what is it that I don't know, and how I, you know, how I just haven't been aware of others' suffering or others', you know, invisibility. And I think that's what's great about this work. It's just, it is humbling. And it's so much about the community and allowing for others to have a space that they can share in a way they never would. And I think that's what's so moving about the opening reception. You know, there was just so many community voices inside of the Divinity School, and they opened their doors to us. They were totally welcoming, and just, it was an incredible event. I mean, we had the Resistance Choir performing The Sound of Silence. We had children running around. It was incredibly moving, and I think that makes me want to keep doing this work, you know, just seeing the way it is affecting people.
This is the Women's History Month, and we just celebrated on this past Thursday the International Women's Day. And the international part, too, I think you're talking about the privilege that we have living in the Northeast, living in this community, that this is such, we are so fortunate in terms of our societal, the society that we live in, even though it seems difficult. And I was just hearing a story on NPR this past week about a community, I guess this was probably in Nigeria, where a number of the women who were kidnapped by some of the rebel forces and are now coming back into their communities. And because they have been, they were sexually violated, they are not welcome back. And that's another form of complicity that happens frequently. Women who invite are seen as inviting sexual abuse. And that happens a lot throughout many, many cultures, many fundamentalists.
So much. I mean, it's all over the world. I mean, and I think we see those acts every day. And I think there are people that also don't realize how they're being complicit, you know, how they're allowing for things to continue to happen, how they just choose to turn the other way because it's not affecting their lives. And, I mean, when you see people, you know, going into the streets, protesting, creating political art, engaging in dialogue, this is not a commodity for people. I mean, we're doing this because, you know, it's like, what kind of world, or what kind of community are we building for children, for ourselves? I mean, what future are we hoping to have if we're just going to sit back and watch, or if we're just going to say, well, that's not affecting me, so why should I put myself out there? And, you know, and not to say that it's not hard. I think it can be hard, I think. But maybe, you know, what we can do is just create a little more dialogue amongst ourselves, not be so reactive, understand that, why somebody might see things differently, and how through that dialogue, you know, we can create a sense of respect and start acknowledging people that, you know, we're all different. All we want is to be respected. We want to be, you know, we want to feel safe. We want to, you know, I want to feel that my voice is heard. And that these are just simple human basic needs. And but again, I think we have to start right here in our communities, you know, start in your neighborhood, in your school, and, you know, engaging with children, with you know, universities, you know, high school, you know, and teaching them, like, why there is this mobilization happening right now, why are there so much activism, why there's so much political art, you know, why there is this need for us to have a voice. I mean, I think that's what we want to teach our children, you know, to let them know that their voice matters, that when they speak, people will listen, you know, and they also should hear others too.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Lucy. And I didn't make it to the Friday night opening, but I look forward to taking a walk up the hill sometime. It's going to be a little bit warmer, I think, this week and some sunny days.
I'm happy to do a walkthrough with you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I'll be in touch. And again, the website is nastywomanct.org. You can find out about the many events that are happening or looking up Nasty Women Connecticut on Facebook. And thank you again. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Valerie. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you are listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. We are online at WPKN.org, and we do put podcasts up of a lot of our discussions, political affairs, news, and community affairs that happen here at WPKN. A great diversity. And I just want to mention one other show that's happening, a powerful show about women at the Eli Center of Contemporary Art in New Haven. And that is Our Bodies, Our Selves, the movement from the 70s. It generated a book. It's generated a number of activities in a community of women. And there is a celebration of that movement, that book. It opened this afternoon, in fact, from 1 to 4 was the opening, and it included a discussion with Our Bodies, Ourselves founders, Judy Norsigian and Joan Ditzian. And so that was happening this afternoon. So you can find out more about that exhibition by going to elycenter.org, and that's E-L-Y-C-E-N-T-E-R. My colleague Martha Willette Lewis did an interview on her last live culture show, which happens on the last Saturday of the month at 11 a.m. And if you go to WPKN or to our look through our podcast, if you can Google Martha's last show, and it was number 48, New Again Live Culture. And you can the second half of that show, that hour-long show, was an interview with Valerie Garlick, Mindy Engelhardt, and Nadine Nelson, who are part of Our Bodies, Ourselves, the exhibition that opened today. And that is located at 51 Trumbull Street in New Haven.